Hello guys, welcome back to Shirt Up. Today I have the pleasure of sitting down with Brock Tompkins, a miner slash hoster at DSO, founder of DSO, short for Deep South Operating. And we covered the hosting market today, how hosting was back then, what he would have done different. And yeah, it's been a good conversation and I hope you enjoy. All right, everyone, welcome back to the show. Hash Right Up today with Mr. Brock Tompkins. Hello, Brock. How are you doing?
Good. How are you doing, Jesse?
Very, very well. Brock, you are the CEO of Deep South Operating, DSO for short. And the two of us are going to talk a bit about hosting today. You've been around. You are also one of the first industry friends of my main sponsor by the name of Hashbranch. So
sure.
Definitely wanted to get you on and talk a bit about hosting and see what new things I can learn from you when it comes to the industry and that perspective and that side of things. Before we get started though, let me just pull up the screen for everybody listening. This is a time where you switch to video. We are recording at 900661. Last block was found by Foundry again. And the mempool is still quite empty. Fees are not ramping up, even though activity and price are moving up. So let's see if that increases over the next couple of weeks. Hash price since the last episode is not much different. 55, right around there. And we are expecting, where's my difficulty adjustment? We're expecting it to be slightly easier in the next coming weeks. We are about 76% to the next adjustment. Okay, so Bitcoin price pulling up hash price a little bit over here. I'm sure that makes your client happy, Brock, in general.
Absolutely. Right?
If their margins increase. Do you have many older machines still online that are sort of scraping by at the moment?
Our clients do, yes. We have some of those machines, some S19 variants that, as you put it, are scraping by. But have seen, as a host, a lot of those, people don't want to pay and they end up getting turned over to us or just getting palletized and left at our site. So that's kind of the dilemma of a host at scale that we deal with, so...
What's the before I'm going to ask you to just highlight DSO a bit, what's the protocol there? People leave machines at the site. Is there a clause for that in the contract where you're like, okay, you've left it here for 4 weeks. We're not hearing back from you, so we're just going to scrap it or sell it?
Sure, there is. Most of the time, these people are in contact with us and they get to a point where, it's not profitable for them to run a 100T machine, let's say. And so what they'll do is they'll just say, hey, we want to turn these off. And at that point, it's really up to us if we want to continue to work out some type of arrangement with them, if we want to run them ourselves, or if we want to just palletize them and stick them in storage for pretty much indefinitely at that point. We rarely go back and reslot them in containers to run them. When the market moves back up, the phone starts ringing off the hook from all those clients that wants to put them back on, but usually we have filled the space with other folks. It's always an interesting conversation, but it's just hard to run at scale and let people turn off and turn on for what we're trying to do. We're trying to run a site. We're trying to use as much power as we can, and letting people do that either leaves extra capacity on our site, which means we're not maximizing our bottom line, which is what our ultimate goal is, or giving the customer that variability without some type of, slot rent or something like that, which most clients don't want to pay. It's just kind of a dilemma.
Yeah,
for both sides, for us and the client, for the host and the client.
The dilemma is always where the client has to understand that you're running a business and
correct,
what it looks like from your perspective. So those are always the difficult conversations to have. And Brock, before I already have too many follow-up questions. Let's get started on DSO, Deep South Operating. Sure. You have been doing this for 2.5-3 years now. Highlight your company a bit and what sticks out as to, you know, why you're still around, basically.
A little bit of history of DSO, and then I'll kind of get to how we came to it. But DSO started in at the beginning of 22. We put our first 2 megawatts online. That was immersion. Since that time, we've put on another 23 megawatts of air, all at our 25 megawatt site in Iuka, Mississippi. Just this month, so I guess today's the 10th. So 10 days ago, we energized a second site up in Tennessee that has 9 megawatts of immersion set up via an IntelliFlex system. So we just energized that the 1st of June and are getting that ramped up as we speak. I was on site there yesterday with the team, and we're running about 6 megawatts, and the rest of the gear should be in to get it to 9 for a 7-1 startup.
Very nice.
But kind of about us, how I got into it, I have two partners. One's my brother, one's my cousin. And we got into mining, just buying some miners. And it wasn't a good experience for us. It was a bad experience. Our first experience in buying miners was with a large company that's still around today. And I won't give their name, but we bought a bunch of miners from them. Never mined an ounce of Bitcoin, and were able to sell them after about 6 months from them supposed to be online. We bought some more, bought some more miners, didn't have a good experience there. And basically, I'm somewhat of a serial entrepreneur, said there's got to be a better way to do this. And one thing led to another, and we were just looking for a 1 megawatt container to put on the site that we have now that's 25 megawatts. And it grew into what it is now. And just, you know, not saying we're any better, any different than anybody else, Jesse, but we just, you know, the experience we had wasn't good. And we were in, we were hosting in the U.S., we're trying to host in the U.S., and then up in Canada. And both times it was a bad experience for us personally.
And is that why you decided to offer hosting yourselves? Because you realized what the industry was missing and that you
probably also... Correct. I mean, we
and
just
people built, who had similarly bad experiences.
We built it like that, and from a host perspective, it is hard to make everybody happy. I understand that, but just trying to kind of our strategy is to try to make every situation a win-win for both sides. But it does come with its own issues. But that, you know, we just wanted to be. Kind of look at it differently. I'm not just going to take your miner. I'm not just going to charge you and not respond to you. That's not really what we want to do.
Yeah. Would you say that has largely changed over the last 3 years when it comes to the hosting industry in general? Have we gotten a bit more professional when it comes to offering these services? I mean, there are really good hosts out there. The industry is still quite small, and word travels really fast, I feel like. So filtering out the bad guys from the good is, if Correct. You're looking, is quite easy.
It is, but if you're coming in, you don't know anybody, Jesse. Like, I came in flat-footed. I didn't know anybody in the industry, and now I know what I know. But you are absolutely right. You hit the nail on the head with what's wrong with this industry. It's still relatively small, and there are still bad players in the industry, and they need to continue to get weeded out through word of mouth, through people wanting to pull their gear and move it elsewhere. We've taken gear from other people that just had some crazy... crazy hosting contracts with other parties, and you know, they paid a ton of money to get out of a contract and brought it to us. And it just, you know, so look at reviewing some of those contracts and things. It's just a lot of people still look at it as a host, as kind of, I don't know, as a get rich quick, scheme. And it's so much more than that. It is so difficult. We've got so many lumps that we've taken along the way, and we continue to like the space. We continue to want to expand, are working on further expansions, but it is definitely anything but a get rich quick scheme. And I think a lot of people, move into it when the times are good, and then they flee in the times are bad. And you're seeing that now with people that you haven't heard from for a year or two are all of a sudden getting back into the space.
Yeah, it's I echo the same sentiment when it comes to finding energy in Africa, where I try to get hash rate online, right, as I live in South Africa. And whenever you have conversations with people who are not in the industry, which there are many of, right, because Bitcoin is still so small, you can see virtually the dollar signs popping in people's eyes as soon as you mention Bitcoin, right? But Bitcoin miners are not super wealthy and can pay you way more than the grid can. Like it, and it's these difficult conversations where you have to manage the expectations from people who are like, ah, this guy's into Bitcoin, he must have a lot of money. Now I'm gonna also have a lot of money, so let me push it. And then you're like, no, actually, that's not how it works. But yeah, I'm sure you have that conversation with a lot of the people who have older units. I'm curious, Brock, why did you start with immersion? That's really uncommon, I feel like. And why are you not just self-mining everything? Why do you want to, what's your main reason to offer hosting over?
Sure. From immersion, that was just, I just thought the industry was moving there. If I had to go back 3 years ago at this point, Jesse, I probably wouldn't have built immersion. But that's just a lump that you take in the space. We still run that system. We still have clients that run immersion. The premise of immersion is still good. It's just not widely accepted. And when it is, what we found is people just don't want to pay a premium for it. And it costs more money than it does to run for air, substantially more.
So it's kind of having units are more, right? The units are also more expensive. It's a higher upfront investment, arguably.
Yep.
But why? Okay. Why do you think that is, though? Why? Because it involves the cleaning process. You can't as easily unplug them. Why is it that people don't want to do immersion if the units are more efficient, have higher margins, and all of that?
I think you hit the nail on the head. I think it's cost of the miners. I think it is the cost of the hosting to make it work. And then I think when you look at the large players that are out there, other pubcos and stuff, they have migrated to either immersion or hydro at this point at large scale. And I think the guys that want to buy 100 units or 500 units, they just can't make that work. They just haven't been able to figure out how paying a little bit more, getting a little bit more hash rate. The reason I did it, for the math for me was easy. You could buy less gear and get more hash rate if you were able to immerse them and overclock them.
This episode is sponsored by Hashbranch, the easiest way to mine Bitcoin in the US. Sourcing hardware and rack space usually is a mess. Bad deal structures, misaligned incentives, and no visibility after deployment. I have placed tens of thousands of ASICs in partnership with Hashbranch. What I like most is that they cut through the noise. Fair pricing, aligned terms, and access to hosting that actually works. Use code HASHRATEUP100, visit hashbranch.com today to get $100 off of each miner that you order. Okay, fair enough.
Pretty simple premise.
Why not self-mine? Why do you offer hosting, Brock? Why don't you just self-mine all of the power you have?
We do self-mine, but I mean, Jesse, we've got about 35 megawatts. That's a huge capital investment that we just haven't made. I really like the hosting side of things too. I like doing them in parallel. I like doing hosting as a host. It gives us the ability, Jesse, where we might do a JV, we might do different things instead of just you give me your machines and I charge you X. So there's a lot of different options as a host. If we have the site, we have the power, we have the capacity to take your units, I could do it on a flat rate, I could do it on a JV, I could do it on a rev share. There's just a lot of options for us to still acquire Bitcoin with just setting up and running the operation.
Is there a need, Brock, would you say, as a host, to sell equipment as well? I know what the margins are for selling equipment, and they're quite juicy. I mean, it's not something you very prominently advertise for? Why is that?
I've sold a grand total, Jesse, of one miner in my entire life.
And I'm ahead of you.
It was to an existing client. A lot of people do it, and I understand the economics behind it. For us, we've been trying to get scale versus trying to sell miners to people. Let them get their miners. Let them bring their miners to us. We work with the guys at Hash Branch pretty closely. They're selling the equipment. It's showing up at our site, and that's worked for us. Nice. It's easier for me to try to find new sites and build scale than it is to me go source gear, try to mark it up, and then sell it to customers. It's just a philosophy. I'm not saying we won't ever do it, but I just don't see it on the roadmap in the near future for Deep South.
Okay, cool. Brock, tell me, and because I know a bit about your company, of course, since we've been, you know, crossing paths over the last couple months. Tell people about the special site you have, because it's in the shadow of a nuclear power plant, as I understand it. So people should hear about this.
Yeah, our original site in Iuka is at a old, never commissioned nuclear plant that they started in the late 70s, and they stopped building it in the early 80s. So yeah, our building is in the shadows of the steam tower and the cooling, the steam plant, the cooling tower, and the reactor domes are all right there at our site on a larger parcel that has since we're one tenant on it, but it's about 1,000 acres of fenced space now. But there's some national defense contractors as neighbors, and we have we're on the back of it. And it basically literally in the shadows of the steam tower of where it was. So it is a unique site. I don't know that anyone's got something that's more unique than where we are. So it was an interesting place for sure.
I think you once said it's the most secure hosting operation in the whole of the U.S. Sorry, I just.
I think from a hosting perspective, I'd say we're. We're as safe as anybody else, if not more so.
Cool. Over the last couple years, Brock, what was the worst deal you've had? What absolutely didn't go to plan? What happened there and why? Can you recapitulate?
It took a year plus ago, right before halving, there was a huge demand. There was a run up in Bitcoin. Typically, the worst deals that we've had are people that want to bring used machines in. Mm. So that's the flip side of not brokering equipment, is we don't see it before it comes, and everybody says they have hash reports. And, you know, we took in several megawatts from a client that I was there unloading them with the guys, and I called the client immediately and just started sending them pictures. And you know, I think out of 700 units, like 500 of them flipped on. And so there's 200 bad units from the beginning, and it just never worked out for them.
What did you take away from it?
probably some more protections for us when we're taking used gear from now on. That was the biggest takeaway from us. Steer away from those deals. And if we do, we're going to know where the gear's coming from vetted people. And not just, hey, I got these and I have the hash reports. I'm going to know who the broker is, know a lot of them now anyway, and would be able to cross-reference where they were, how long they'd been there, and make sure the condition that they were in, somebody that I trust that has put eyes on them.
And I mean, we've looked at this a little bit already. What would you say hosting has looked like 3 years ago versus today? Is the customer generally more clued up? Are the machines more reliable? What about the margins? Are they bigger or smaller? What would you say?
Well, I think the margins, the answer to your last question is I think the margins have compressed some with the crypto, you know, post-halving in general. Also to remember, in that time frame, Bitcoin got down to $17,000-$18,000 from where it is now, and that had a lot of people freaking out. But I think post halving late summer last year, you saw a correction, and I think market rates have definitely gone down from a compression standpoint, from a hosting perspective. for guys like me, where if we were getting X now, it's might be 2/10, 3/10, 4/10 of a cent less than we were getting prior to that.
Do the customers demand more specifically or more specific features like precision billing or dashboard access to machines versus 3 years ago? Was that a thing?
Some do, you know, it's in the market, and I know you're familiar with it, but we're talking a big picture, Jesse. You know, everybody wants to call up and get, you know, I had a guy that was looking for 5.7 cent hosting, and I, you know, in North America, I mean, it's, you got to talk to a lot of people to get answers, but it's just, there's a lot of people out there looking for unrealistic hosting too. So, just, you know, you got to take a lot of phone calls.
Yeah. When you mentioned that, I have Chad Paris in my ear immediately that would say, look, if somebody's asking for 5.7 cent hosting, then they're guaranteeing themselves to have a bankrupt host in the very near future. And then their machine is online and offline and nobody wants that. Right.
Yes, absolutely.
And over the last couple years, would you say that the average customer has changed? What was the average customer 3 years ago or 2 years ago versus today?
I think the average customer, the ones that we're at least we're dealing with, and we still have some smaller clients, but I think you're seeing larger MOQs that are coming online versus where we were before. On our site, our average client is, and we have some small count on one hand clients for the number of units. But the average client on our site is probably on our sites is somewhere several hundred machines is an average client. So they're with that much capital, they're typically a little more sophisticated than somebody that just wants to go out and buy 10 machines and figure it out. So yeah, there's a lot of different ways you can structure it. Our site, if you have 100 machines, I can't give you precision billing because our precision is at the transformer level. So until you're running multiple megawatts, can I give you your own container and then give you precision billing? And that's just the way we built our site.
Yeah. Okay. You already hinted at it, right? It's more institutional clients then, or is it business owners who do the tax strategy? Is it people that are from the industry? Hedge funds, investors, like who buys?
It's investors, institute. It's most of our clients, I would say, would be institutional or experienced business individuals that understand what they're doing from a deployment strategy. They're going to deploy this over time. They're not as and it's the customers you typically want are the guys that don't have to sell that hash rate every month, pay the power bill and keep what's left. That's the more difficult strategy. You want that customer that's going to keep it and hold the Bitcoin, the mine coin longer term. Typically you find those to be the more stable customers at our site are the ones that are employing strategies like that.
So those the easiest customers to work with? People who are sophisticated, who understand, who pay their bills on time, who don't bring broken, used equipment.
Paying the bill on time is always good. Yes, that's I would say that people that understand that it's not month to month and that it is a long-term strategy would be the better customers that a host would like to have. They have a clear strategy on equipment acquisition. They have a clear strategy on deployment, and they know how they're going to get there over time.
How do you protect yourself, Brock, against decreasing margins, rate increases from your supplier? I think it's TVA. People not paying on time. What sort of risk factors or what protection mechanisms are in place to protect yourself against that?
Well, the main thing is going to be the contract that you have with the client. There has to be provisions in there that protect the host, and we have those incorporated in our agreement. And it could look a lot of different ways. It could be Jesse, you don't pay your bill that I can run your machines, or you're not going to get your machines until the bill's paid. But typically, there's going to be provisions in there that allows us as the host to make sure that we get paid on a monthly basis for the term of the contract.
Okay.
And if you do that, then we both win.
Is that somewhere where a lot of hosts differentiate, or what makes the difference between a host remaining in the market and getting flushed out? You know, proper contract work and having that side of things covered, or is there other things that you say are more important when it comes to the competition?
Well, the number one thing from any host perspective is the cost of power. If you don't understand that, then you're going to get flushed. We just took a bunch of gear from a client, and his host didn't understand their power, and they got it flipped on, and their cost of power was over 9 cents. This was a multi-megawatt site in 2025. And so they had to pay a bunch of money to get their miners out and brought them down to us. But you understand, and anybody probably listening to this understands that a power cost of 9 cents, you're out of business. You're not functional.
Did they not factor in taxes or?
I didn't get into all the details with the client. I just know it was a bad situation, and that they'd given them a brand new miners, new gen miners. And the power was somewhere north of 9 cents when they got it operational.
That's wild.
So I think it was a lot more than advertised.
That always makes me wonder, like, how do customers find those hosters that obviously don't know much about what they're doing? Are they just great at marketing?
Yeah, they could be great at marketing. And then also too, Jesse, they could honestly have not known, right? If they didn't do the legwork on the front end and understand their power, we work with a power consultant on every site that we vet. And you could tell me you've got nickel power, 4 cent power, and I send it to our power consultant, all the information. And he could come back and say, yeah, it's 4 cent power. Or he's gonna say, no, you forgot this, this, and this, and it's 6.2. And that's not our, I can't figure that out. That's why we work with people that can.
Are you still selling your hard mined Bitcoin for expenses like mining hardware, electricity bills, and tax invoices? With Firefish, you can access liquidity in fiat or stable coins without selling your Bitcoin. Firefish is a peer-to-peer marketplace for non-custodial Bitcoin-backed loans. No credit checks and no monthly payments. Sign up on Firefish today, create a loan request, deposit BTC into a multisig, get funded by an investor, and repay at the end of the term. Collateral is always at least 2x the loan. So if BTC drops by 50%, you may be liquidated. So be sure at any time to top up the collateral as needed. Thanks to the legends at Firefish for sponsoring the show. Use #HashRateUp for a 30% discount on the fees and get your first Bitcoin-backed loan today. Or maybe it's like 4 cent power, and if you reduce consumption down to 80% or something like that.
Correct. Yeah, with 83% uptime or something. Yeah, correct.
What's your strategy there when it comes to marketing? I know you guys have great performance, 99% uptime. I know you guys guarantee 95%, if I'm not mistaken. How do you get that good word out?
For us, Jesse, we don't have a large marketing budget. Ours is, we work with a lot of different brokers, but then our biggest source of business is either customers wanting to add to their fleet or word of mouth. And that's that's where we see a lot of organic growth from us. If you have a good experience with me, you're going to tell your friends, and that's typically how we've seen our growth come. And trying to work with good people in the space too, Jesse, that's very important. As you alluded to earlier, there's different get rich quick people out there, and everybody trying to get over on everybody else, I think. And that's something we try to avoid too.
Yeah. Word of mouth travels very quickly. Hey,
correct.
The question is just always like, how do you attract? And this is what I continuously struggle with is how do you attract the money and educate the money that's not yet in the industry that should be, you know, that where Bitcoin mining is a good investment or a very fitting investment. How do you get those guys to understand that, you know, 95% uptime is a guarantee, 99% is needed, what the risk factors is, why precision billing matters, and all of those little features, security at the site, great operators, historical uptime, and all of that stuff. How do you get that word out there? Do you, for instance, and I see a lot of like people who are in who basically in Germany and Switzerland, they have these heating products, or they'll have products where you mine on stranded solar. They will now go to conventions where energy conventions, very white collar, buttoned up energy conventions, where Bitcoin is still like a, you know, high risk investment or whatever. Have you ever considered doing something like this, like going to an investment convention that's not specifically around Bitcoin or mining, and getting people interested there? Or is that not an option?
I have not done that. I'll be honest with you. It is still early in the game for what we do. I mean, a year ago I had conversations on a project we were working on out of state, and it was next to a greenhouse, substation next to a greenhouse. And I talked to the greenhouse about, you know, 10 megawatts of continuous heat for their operation. And they just said, we're not interested. So they're, you know, it didn't make any sense, but they said they're not interested. Laid it out how we would do it, and pretty straightforward for it. And they just said, we're just not interested at this time. So, you know, you kind of scratch your head, and you got to kind of reevaluate the strategy. But it was a pretty straightforward opportunity with the power and where it was, and how you were going to get the hot water to them in their operation. And it just, you know, it's still new. So people were still have to figure that out.
Where do you think is the lowest hanging fruit to grow? Is it still just pumping out more power and more capacity and running smoothly? You know, as you said before, margins are compressing. So what do you plan, you know, for like the future and DSO? Where do you make sure that you're still profitable and can sell hosting at a reasonable level?
Yeah, I think hosting is still going to be core to what we do. But I mean, Jesse, we're doing some other things too. We're actually finalizing right now, probably in the next 30 days or so, we will probably be the first at scale large manufacturer of BitAx type home miners. Ooh, nice. For in the United States. So we're making computers in the United States and are finished putting the finishing touches on all of that right now. Been under construction for a little while. But we're going to be making the home type miners for, you know, for the masses of people that don't know how to get into or don't know how to get into hosting at scale, but they want to do something at the home front. So we're working with some folks right now, and we're going to deploy that next to our site in Iuka.
So you're going to get into the hardware space then, after all.
Yeah. Who would ever thought we've been making computers in Mississippi, but we are.
Nice. Made in the USA, BitAxis. I think they're a great lead generator to get people interested in mining, get people interested in the concept, maybe going bigger, right? I think it makes a lot of sense. It's sort of like the run your own node of 2 years ago is the you know, everybody should have a BitAx or whatever miner on their desk. I have mine.
It's diversification. It's diversification too for the space too, right? You know, if everybody, you know, if half of America has one plugged in, it's you know, you're not talking about a huge, you're talking about, you know, 2, 4, 6 terahash unit plugged into a wall socket at home. Somebody's not going to think too much about that, but it can.
Yeah, no, exactly. I mean, it's debatable whether the hash rate will save the network if there's a large scale attack, right?
Correct.
But what I think it does is it fosters education. Mm-hmm. And I know I can speak from my experience, but whenever, you know, my wife has friends over, or we have family friends over, and they see the BitAx and they're like, what is that? You know, and then it's a conversation starter. And I think that that factor of these little sort of home display mining, because nobody sees your hash rate, right? If I'm a customer of yours, correct, I have my S21 running, nobody knows. I can show them, cool, I can show them my Foam and dashboard or whatever people are using. But it's not the same, you know, and you're like, okay, what is that thing? Yeah, it's mining Bitcoin. Okay, how does it do that? And you just start a conversation. And I think it does a lot for in that regard.
For and the price point's a lot different too. You're talking about a few hundred dollars versus several thousand to get, you know, an S21 that you talk to. So, you know, it's how you want to get into it and learn. And you've been in it longer than me, Jesse, and you've made mistakes and I've made mistakes. And somebody that wants to get into it low and slow can start with a home device, plug it in at home and kind of take their lumps as they figure it out from there.
What do you think those guys that have been in the industry for a bit and have all the units, S19s or whatever in the US, what do you think is going to happen to all of those machines?
They're going to have to go off grid. They're going to have to go on peak, off peak. They might have to go off continent more riskier areas so that they can continue a useful life. I just don't know where you can run a 100T miner in the United States at scale on grid 98-99% of the time and still make consistent money at it.
It's just so difficult to sell them. Shipping them anywhere almost makes no financial sense. And this problem is going to be growing, right? I don't know how many ASICs get sold a month. Call it, 3 million or something? In 2 years' time, the volume of old ASICs is going to be that much bigger and already is quite big. So, right, this is why Hashbranch and I are focusing so much on their redeployment strategy, where we find, as you said, like off-peak deals, profit splits, funky, grimy stuff that squeezes it a bit more life out of these units. But I think you're going to have a lot more customers as you keep growing that will have these old machines without any idea of what they're doing. You know, I know you guys don't yet maybe offer a marketplace like other folks have.
We don't.
Where people can take really bad deals on their used gear to do anything with them, right? But I mean, at the end of the day, this is also something you have to think about because now storage costs money, right? You cannot just store indefinite amounts of machines for an indefinite amount of time because at some point you have to factor that cost in as well. And, you know, nobody's going to pay you for it. So the question is, what do you do?
But also, too, as a host, too, Jesse, I can't go build a 25-megawatt site that's going to run, you know, 70% of the time.
True.
To make that equipment run. Because of the capital cost for me to do that, I need to run 95%+ of the time, or the cost structure completely changes. If that gear has to run off peak at, you know, 2/3 the cost of what it runs around the clock, the margin's got to be there to make that investment, regardless of if it's 60% or 70% of the time, or if it's 98-99% of the time.
So I'm just spitballing here, right? But what if, and you know hardware in the US and cost much better than I do, but what if you like went super low quality, low cost equipment, and you just said to the customer, look, here's an out option. I'm going to give you $50 for your machine, get them dirt cheap and plug them in at 80% uptime and get your investment back and have something running. Is that a potential option, or does it just make too much more sense to say, I'm going to build, you know, for regular hosting because the demand is there and worry about that problem later?
I think a kind of a hybrid of what you talked about is kind of what we already do, Jesse. If we have some extra space or some of your miners break and they're shipped off for repair, we will take some of the old gen gear that you're talking about and we will fill slots on our site for our own self-mining. And that makes sense for us. So we're taking it off a pallet, we're plugging it in, but at scale, no. You're talking about at most a few hundred miners. You're not talking about 20 megawatts of miners.
Yeah, now you got me thinking. Now we're talking about like stranded rack space, right?
That's the way we do it.
And if nobody's taking it, then it's basically a stranded asset for you, a stranded slot.
Correct.
And another thought there is like if you do, I don't know, 30% uptime solar, you need to get mm-hmm. that money back as well, right? This is something I've been stumbling about here in South Africa is if you, yes, you may have the stranded solar asset, but then you need to plonk a transformer or a container down, and they cost the same whether they run 30% correct. Of the time or not. So that's
what you think 4 cents is great at is not 4 cents anymore. If you're running half the time, it's got to be 8 cents, right?
Yeah.
And then it becomes not, you know,
not feasible,
not achievable, not feasible. Absolutely,
doesn't work on the spreadsheets. Brock, if you started today from scratch, what would you do, and what would you do different?
First thing I would do different is I wouldn't start setting up immersion from a initial hosting, and then that would be my biggest takeaway. I think as you learn in this space and you make better contacts and you build your own network, that your costs go down. Once you figure it out, every iteration, every site that we built or expansion that we've done, the cost per megawatt for us has gone down. The quality's gone up, I think, but the cost has gone down. And that is very important. And I don't think that's something that you can't learn until you do it, because everybody's going to give you advice and you have to figure out the best way to do that. But from us personally, we wouldn't have started with the immersion and would have just done air all along.
Have you gone to conferences right in the beginning when you started out, or how did you build your network first?
Mining conferences, did different things. Started with mining conferences. We've worked with a consultant for a long time. Through our whole expansion, continue to work with them to this day, to make sure that we're building our own network through trusted partners, if you will. I think that's very important.
Hashrate Up is sponsored by solomining.de, the place to buy open source home and solo mining devices like the BitX. With about 20 watts of usage, these solo mining devices are perfect to play the lottery from home or from the office. Get 5% off with the code HASHREDUP. Thanks to the legends at solomining.de for sponsoring the content. All right. Last but not least, Brock, profit split deals. What do you think about them? Will they be a more featured deal type in the future or not? Where do you see strength or weaknesses? Do you like them, not like them?
No, we're fine with them. I think I think they're all over the place. I think as the markets heat up, you see more of them. You see more. I know in the last month, I've gotten a lot more inquiries than I did for the probably last 6 months on people looking for rev share deals. As long as it's new gear, they're fine, Jesse. But I mean, for every new gear one, I've had five that are what you're talking about. Hey, somebody needs to park their 100 T miners and they want a 50-50 rev share. And, you know,
where's the cutoff for new and not new for you?
I think you're talking about 200 T and up is a new gen. And that's moving into the teens now, 216, 218. I think it continues to climb. You could do something less, right? You could do a 180 ish type miner, but you know, then to make the same amount of money, the percentage has to go up, right? Yeah. Because all that a rev share, which people don't understand at the time, but you know, what might be looking like a 7 cent all in rev share deal, power plus what the host gets today, isn't 7 cents for that, for the host in 6 months or a year, because the difficulty's gone up. And so it's a little bit harder to have people fully understand that the host is taking all the liability at that point and taking up that rack space and that power capacity. So it has to be a win-win for both sides.
Yeah, I mean, the way I like to broker these or negotiate them is to look at different hash price scenarios, right?
Yeah.
We ask both sides what their scenario is for worst case, best case scenario, and something in the middle for hash price. And then you can sort of find a baseline, you know, and agree on things. But the difficulty is when one party says, no, hash price on average is going to be 70, and the other says it's going to be 40. And now, you know, I don't want to pay 12 cents for hosting, right? And
then it becomes difficult. Yeah, exactly.
But,
exactly.
But it gives me a bit more wiggle room as a broker to educate and talk to people and give them a different idea around it. Because I feel like they're still quite misunderstood. But the benefit of aligning interests and everybody goes to party when hash price goes up. Yes, difficulty goes up, but if Bitcoin keeps doing what it's doing, the fiat price or the dollar price is going to go up much quicker than the difficulty can, in my opinion.
Correct.
And so there's always room there. Anyway, Brock, you had something?
No, I think you're right. I think you and I have talked about it before in the past, Jesse. There's different levers that you can put in a rev share deal that makes it a win-win for both sides. And that could be an adjustment up or an adjustment down. So everybody still gets theirs.
And we're going to go down in the next couple of weeks, as we've seen.
Fingers crossed.
Brock, why should people go and visit Hashbranch's website and request that the machines are sent to you? What makes you guys stick out? Give people a bit of round off here.
No, I think I think they keep the site up times up there, and I think ours are as good as anyone else's. I think we have a great team at Deep South. I think we tend to keep things as transparent as humanly possible for all parties involved in the transaction, from our guys on the ground communicating with the clients. I just think that we try to make sure everybody's informed and know what's going on. And so I think working with Tom and the guys at Hash Branch, I think they set the table at the beginning of the introduction, and we continue that on when we get the gear and we get it deployed and get it pointed at the customer's wallet.
Yeah, sounds good. Last but not least, Rob, how was Vegas for you?
Vegas was good. I enjoyed it. I find as we grow in the space, so those things become more and more not just a conference to visit, but a conference to go and see folks, right, Jesse, and that you can't see because they're all over the world, and just get a little FaceTime with folks you do business with. So I think they become more and more important from that perspective. Not important that I'm going to go find some customer looking for, you know, 100 megawatts of hosting, but I'm going to solidify the people that we're already doing business with inside our circle. So
yeah, the follow up to that, is it still new folks that you meet, or is it maybe just as you said, it's just mainly keeping tabs on folks and developments, people moving positions?
It's both. I mean, there's guys that are customers of ours that I never met that, you know, I set up a meeting with there, and, you know, we had a beer or whatever and put names with faces. And then, same with guys that we're already doing business with that we've met before, and just re-engaging with them.
Love it. Brock, thank you so much for your time. I'm really glad we did this. We've crossed paths quite a few times. Sure there's a lot that people can take from this. I know I have. So thank you so much for your time. And have a great day.
Thanks. You too, Jesse. Take care.